Good evening to all. I'm an alcoholic. My name is James. Alcoholics Anonymous is the fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help each other recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Please join me in the serenity prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Elizabeth will read the steps.
Hi, everyone. My name's Elizabeth, and I'm an alcoholic. The 12 steps. 1. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. Were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
John will read the traditions.
Hi, my name is John. I'm an alcoholic. Hi. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. 6, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
The format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers, followed by our information break, and then our main speaker, who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker is Jeremy.
Thank you very much. I'm Jeremy. I'm an alcoholic. And it's really overwhelming to stand up here in front of all of the other alcoholics sitting out there. But it's also an honor. And I have to say, never in my life did I think I would be standing here. And once I got sober on August 11th, 1996, I did not think that I would ever be in an AG meeting. So this is monumental for me. My sponsor, you may know him, is Jeffrey H. And when I first got sober, you know, I hated everybody. I hated the meetings. I hated people. I was about 166 pounds. I had long curly hair, and I wore rollerblades everywhere around the city. So I got a sponsor against my will, and I started, you know, working the steps. I should qualify a little bit as an alcoholic. I definitely fit in this program, and I definitely belong here. My last 2 weeks of drinking, just really quickly, I went out after work for a drink, one, with some friends, and I came to on a plane going to Hawaii. And when I came back, God intervened and somebody said, you need to go to a meeting. And I said, I'm not going to do that. Didn't work for my mother. I went 10 years ago when I was 19. It didn't work for me then. It won't work. Somehow I got to that meeting. Somehow after about 70 days, I got a sponsor and I started working the steps. And I had a life-changing experience. I met my wife, who is here today, in AA. We got married. We had a child. I got married in Hawaii, by the way. Looked completely different than it had the first time. And, you know, my life got really good. I started a business and, you know, started to get really successful. My sponsor... at that time, after having gone through the steps and making amends and everything, left. He moved to Los Angeles, and I got a huge resentment. And I looked for somebody else to sponsor me, and in my attempts, the people that I was looking for didn't really, you know, I was just looking. I just, like, thought, oh, I need a sponsor. Needless to say, I didn't get a sponsor. So I continued in this program for another 7 years without a sponsor. This is where my life got really, really bad, but I, of course, was fine. I had absolutely no problems. In fact, you were my problem. I was doing everything right. I had the answer to everything. I'd been sober for so long. I had married. I bought an apartment, blah, 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 blah. And I was, you know, on my way to happy, joyous, and free. And I think, you know, that's what I projected to people. But inside, I was getting very small. And I was collapsing and dying without realizing what was happening to me. Because I have a disease that tells me that I'm okay every single day. That I don't need you. I don't need anybody, and I'm self-sufficient, and I can do this all my own. I've done it all my life. So it's a miracle that I didn't drink, that I didn't pick up. I went to meetings. I shared. People always told me I was sharing honestly, and I felt good about that. But I was showing up at the meetings early, and I was leaving the meetings late, and my home group at that time, I started to feel really invisible. I wasn't saying hi to the person next to me. I wasn't turning around and talking to anybody. I was like, how can I just go to this meeting and get out of here as quick as possible? So that just continued and continued and continued. And you know, I got very resentful. Thank you. My problems got huge, and my life got really, really, really small. And I had this voice that said, go to another meeting, go find another meeting, go find another meeting, you need a sponsor, go to another meeting, figure out another meeting, do something. Finally, I went to another meeting, and I shared. I didn't have a sponsor. My life had gotten really small again, blah, 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 blah. And somebody from this group, God forbid, came up to me who was 20, you know, years younger than me and said, I know exactly how you feel. You need to come to a meeting with me. And I thought, oh boy, here we go. What does this person have to teach me? You know, what does he have to teach me? So I went home and I told my wife, and she was like, what have you got to lose? Go to the meeting, you know, call a guy, go to the meeting. And I said, okay. He said, we're going to go to the Atlanta group. I said, oh my God. Do I have to dress up? You know, I had all these preconceived notions. So he met me at the coffee shop, and we talked, and I went to a Sunday night meeting at the Atlantic Group, and he gave me Jeffrey's number, or Jeffrey gave me his number. I met him very briefly, and two other people came out of the meeting from years ago that I had gotten sober with, and I told them what was going on, and they said, you know who you need to talk to? You need to talk to Jeffrey. Jeffrey's the person you need to call. And I was like, really? I just got his number. That's so weird. So again, I went home and I contemplated this. And I again said to my wife, what should I do? And by this time, she's like, call him, you know? Not really, I'm being dramatic, but you get the picture. So I called him. And I met him. And, you know, I have to honestly say, I had huge resistance. This person wanted to go through the big book, which was cool, and he started on the title page and, like, spent 20 minutes maybe on the title page. And, you know, my ego is like, oh, my God, I can't believe I've got 14 and a half years sober and I'm talking about the title page of the big book. But rest assured, I went through these steps, and when I got to step two, I had a life-changing experience. Life-changing. Once I allowed this power greater than myself back into my life, these thoughts in my head went and flew away. They didn't really fly away, but they got really, really, really small. And God's voice got a lot louder. And I thought, oh my God, I'm having an experience again. An amazing experience. I'm truly grateful for that because I was at the end again. I don't know if I was going to drink. I don't know what I was going to do. But my business was failing. You know, I was just having problems all over the place. But when I had this second step experience, I really started to believe that maybe the plan for me was to go through everything that I had gone through so that I could help other people, you know. And then I went through step three, went through step four, and now I'm at the end of step five. And it's been an amazing experience again. I didn't think I had any resentments. I had already done 2 4 steps, so I was like, what am I going to write? But I had a ton. I had a ton. And I went through them in a way I never had before, and very honestly and very deeply, and it cracked me open again, you know. God entered me and cracked me open. And I have to say today, my life has shifted. My perspective has shifted. I'm comfortable again in my skin. I'm much more easygoing. And I'm much more forgiving, I think, of myself and other people. And I find that my tolerance level is way huger. So, you know, if anybody in here has ever been dry like me, and you know what it's like, you know, it's really, really painful. And I'm so glad that, you know, my friend Shervin woke me up again. I hope I've said something that was helpful to everyone tonight. I'm so grateful to be here, so amazed that I'm sitting here looking in front of all of you people, all you beautiful sober alcoholics. Thank you so much.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Rachel.
Hi, my name's Rachel. I'm an alcoholic. Yes, good to be here. Thank you very much for having me speak. My sobriety date is May 25th of 2006, and I have a sponsor, Amanda, who I love. And my home group is actually in Connecticut. It's the Greenwich 12 and 12 group in Greenwich, Connecticut. And I used to be a member of the Atlantic group, but I moved to Connecticut a while ago and decided to get a group out there. So I guess, you know, I wanted to maybe mention that what the Atlantic group and AA has done for me. I came to this Tuesday night meeting when I had around just over 3 years sober, and I had been to the Atlantic group before on a trip to New York where I was making amends, and I had gone to the Thursday night meeting, so it was kind of like, okay, I know what to expect. And I walked into this room and I was like terrified, and I sat in the back and I didn't introduce myself, and I happened to see a friend of mine, Alyssa, after the meeting, and I see her every once in a while. I saw her in Florida where I got sober. I knew her even before I was sober, and it's just someone who pops in and out of my life. But the message that she gave me, she's like, oh my God, she introduced me to a few women up here in the front, and then she's like, you know, you moved here to New York. You have to treat yourself like you're a newcomer again. And I knew what she was talking about, because when I was new, I did certain things that people suggested, and I had to do that again in order to plug myself in to AA. So, you know, things that I've learned in the program, like, have taught me how to live my life. And I've heard other people say, like, there was this rule book for life, and I didn't get a copy of it. And I felt that way always. Like, I had fit in life, but I just never really knew. Like, I always felt very insecure inside, and I would never tell people about it. I would just sit with those feelings of fear and insecurity, and then have this big ego because I didn't want anyone to know that I was so insecure. And, you know, AA has alleviated that, because I've learned just little tools, I call them, that help me in life. And it's just like, you know, showing up to the meeting early and staying late. And in this group, like, you can come 2 hours early. And, you know, if you do and you have this time where you're kind of like not talking to anyone, that's the worst, most uncomfortable feeling, where I'm not talking to someone and I'm just kind of like standing there. But I learned that you could look for someone who's also not talking to anyone and maybe like break the ice with a compliment, and, you know, find someone else who looks more uncomfortable than you, ask them how they're doing. And that's something I just did not, wasn't even aware of before, of how to act that way. And I've learned that and many other things through, you know, coming to AA and just showing up, and, you know, also showing up for fellowship. And, you know, so uncomfortable for me to do that, to go out after the meeting. But if I take a service commitment, or if I tell someone I'll meet them there, then that makes it a little easier. I kind of have to trick myself into doing these things sometimes. But yeah, I came into this room 3 years sober, and I saw Alyssa, and she helped me out. I joined this group. I was coming to this meeting like all the time, and then I moved to Connecticut. I got a job out there, and I was still coming back to this meeting 3 times a week, driving back from Connecticut. It was a lot, and I had like 5 years, and I was starting to feel really awful. My spirituality, like Jeremy shared about, you know, wasn't quite so long, but I had that feeling of, like, you know, not knowing, like, I had some outside issues that I needed to look at with the help of Amanda, 'cause she told me it was normal with 5 years to feel like you're losing your marbles instead of gaining them. And I talked to some women and focused on some outside issues, but more importantly, I realized that I needed to plug myself in to AA in Connecticut, and because I worked out there, I lived out there, so I did what I know how to do, what I did in like my first 90 days, which was to go to meetings every day and to join a home group out there and to take some service commitments. And the service commitments have been amazing, and, you know, that was about a year ago, and since then, everything has changed for me. I mean, I was feeling awful, and now I have an amazing job. It's pretty new. It's amazing, and that's a result of AA. I know it is, and I have really, really good women. One of my friends came with me tonight all the way from Connecticut, which is, like, so cool, and I have, like, this life that I couldn't have dreamed of. And just to qualify myself a little bit, you know, I I think of my alcoholism like they talk about in the ninth step, like the tornado that just runs through everything and just destroys everything in its path. And I was that tornado. Like, I was selfish and self-centered to the extreme. If I needed to get something, then it didn't matter, like, who I was supposed to show up for or, you know, what commitments I had. At the end, I had an inability to show up. And I was living with a friend of mine, my best friend from, you know, since 8 years old. And I just think of, like, how I treated her as, like, the epitome of how I was in my alcoholism, because we were living together and I was just disrespectful. I would have parties in our house all the time. I would invite strangers over, and, you know, people who were selling dry alcohol were there constantly smoking cigarettes, and there was poor ventilation, and I just didn't even care. And a lot of times I would drink, like, a bottle of vodka, a bottle of wine, and she just couldn't believe I was drinking so much. And I would say, you have to wake me up in the morning. Just, you know, wake me up in the morning, make sure I get up for work. And a number of times she could not wake me up. I mean, just imagine how scary that is. And she had to leave for work, and she would be shaking me. And, I mean, she told me these stories, so that's how I know about them. But I just couldn't wake up. And, you know, needless to say, I lost that friendship. I lost it for 3 years. And today I have it back in my life as a result of this program. But, you know, I lost my friendship. I got kicked out of that apartment. I lost my job. All within a short period of time. And that didn't even stop me. You know, I to deal with those problems, my solution was to drink more alcohol. And I continued to drink more alcohol for about 6 more months. I went to some treatment centers. I went to some outpatient programs. And it kept getting worse. And I kept feeling worse about myself. I mean, the moral compass that I had grown up with was just broken. And I began to become a thief and a liar, and worst of all, I had thrown my integrity and my morals out the window. And so it was Mother's Day weekend, and I was supposed to show up for a Mother's Day event with my grandmother and my uncle and my aunt and my cousins, and I thought it was more important to get what I needed to get and to do what I needed to do. And again, like that tornado, and in the book, it talks about how, like, in other areas of my life, formerly, I had been, you know, able, intelligent, but when it came to alcohol, you know, I was just not normal. And I know today that that's my alcoholism. And so I couldn't show up for Mother's Day. And that's when God's grace, I believe, came in, because I had a friend, an acquaintance that I just got honest with, one person that I got a little honest with, and it just propelled me to a detox, and then I had a little bit of willingness, mostly because I had no more money left, I had no more health insurance left, I had nothing left, so I had to agree to go to Florida and live in a halfway house for 6 months, where I said, if I'm going to be in this halfway house with my little bit of willingness, I'll just do what people suggest. And throughout that time and taking those suggestions, I built my foundation. And so I began to change a little bit. I mean, I started feeling a little bit better, just a little bit. And, you know, mainly from working the program, I began to feel better. And little by little, it's expanded, and it, like I said, you know, around 5 years, it got a little worse, and it gets a little better if I do the things that I know how to do. So I guess, you know, what I wanted to say really is that, you know, if you're new, or if you're coming back, or if you maybe like me, you know, you've been around for a while, but you're just feeling like you're in a lot of pain, you know, pain is the touchstone for growth or for change. And so when I feel like I have pain, then I try to use that as an opportunity to change something. And, you know, there's always the principles of these programs. And if you, you know, need a new sponsor, like I did, you know, then you do that so you can work the steps and get better. And that's it, I think. Goodbye.
Our main speaker tonight is Dave.
Got me, huh? Thank you. Hey, everybody, I'm Dave Perry. I'm an alcoholic. Wow, this is so cool. Thanks for having me.
I consider it a huge honor and privilege. Jeffrey, thanks for navigating me from Boston down to your podium. I couldn't have done that without you. And also my friends Jake and Andrew, who found their way across town to join me tonight, and my good friend Dave, who drove down with me today from Boston. I thank you guys very much. You know, they may not be taking this podium tonight, but they're carrying a message, aren't they, huh? You know, they're showing up. You know, my sponsor taught me early on, that's all this is really about, showing up. Alcoholics Anonymous is nothing but the showing up business, the making it available business, the message delivery business. You know, I didn't know that for the longest time. I thought you guys just go teach me how to put the drink down for one day. Just stay sober for one day at a time. Struggle through another day. Fight the fight. Hang in there. Monkey on my back. Shake it off. Shoot for midnight. One day at a time, you know? You know? It's an awful lot one day at a time for me, you know? I can't do that one day at a time. I've learned that. But my sponsor taught me that. This is just showing up. Just making it available. Trying to carry a message. That's all it is. Look at that 12th step. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result, not a result, the result of these steps. We tried to carry a message. There's nothing about being successful, you know? My really doesn't. If my success depended upon the success of the people I sponsor, guys, I wouldn't be here tonight. I have to guarantee you, though. You know, and I was taught that early on by my sponsor. Nothing but paper boys and paper girls for God. That's all we are. God writes it, we deliver it. God writes it, we do. Paper lady? Paper mister? That's all this is, you know? And they were taught that ought to be. And my sponsor knew me, too. He told me at the outset, he goes, you know, Dave, I know how you're going to be. You're not going to make this about the message delivery business. You're not going to make this about the carrying the message. You're not going to make this about the showing up or making it available business. You're going to be keeping score. I know you. You're going to make it about the results business. You're going to be in the outcome business. You're going to be in the keeping score business. He says, put the scorecard away. Stop. You don't get them sober. You don't get them drunk, Dave. You're not that powerful, you know. You know, stop right now. I heard a guy back in Boston one time say, you guys, he made it so clear. He put it in proper perspective. He took a podium one time and he said a message that hit me in the heart. He says, I've been sober 20 years. He said, in my 20 years of sobriety, I've sponsored over 200 men with 100% success rate. I go, wow, you got to be kidding me. All my guys are drinking. I said, how are you doing that? He goes, no, don't get me wrong. A lot of my guys are drinking. Matter of fact, some of them are dead. But I've been happily, joyfully sober for these 20 years, and I call that 100% success. He showed up. He carried a message. He tried. You know, my sobriety date is November 15, 2001, you guys. A little over 10 years, 3 months, and 3 weeks ago, I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I say I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous because I've been here before. What's not my first time here? You know, prior to November 15, 2001, I will be in and out. Oh, and by the way, in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous for 12 years. 12 years chronically relapsing. 12 years watching it work for all you guys when it ain't working for me. 12 years watching and hearing about the miracles in your life that weren't happening in mine. 12 years miserably sober. Sentenced to sobriety. Sentenced to Alcoholics Anonymous. Because that's what it felt like. That's every time I was here, and every stretch of sobriety I had during those 12 years, whether it was a week, whether it was a month, whether it was a year, at one place, 3 years I stayed sober. 3 years taking no action whatsoever, guys. No action. Doing nothing but just coming to your meetings and grabbing your coffee and taking a cheer. Not touching those steps, not opening this book, doing nothing of those things. You know, the longest I could stay sober was 3 years. And during every stretch of sobriety, it was all marked by the same commonality. I was miserable. Untreated sobriety. Untreated alcoholism. A bad case of it, too. You know what I mean? That's what I was suffering from all those times, you know? And every time I was here, you know, I know how to quit drinking, guys. I've done it 1,000 times. I know how to quit, you know? Seriously. Can you guys show me how to stay quit? Can you guys show me how to not start again? Or better yet, can you guys show me how to stay quit and stay comfortable doing it? That was my mistake. That was my problem. I couldn't figure out how to get comfortable doing it, you know? But this time around, here I stand. Here I stand, like I say, 10 years, 3 months, and 3 weeks, and a few days into this deal. And I'm here to report, and I didn't drive all the way down to New York here to lie to you, you know? No, isn't that great, Dave, on the way back? Yeah, I got over on them tonight, didn't we, huh, buddy? Yeah! Fooled about 300 people in New York City tonight. Yeah, we did. I didn't drive down and lie to you. I'm here to report the truth. The truth of the matter is simply this, you guys. I am here to report that I have been happily, joyfully sober for the better part of these last 10 years. Happily, joyfully sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. Go figure. Happy and sober. Same sentence. Oh, whoa. I could never get that before. Either you're happy or you're sober. Make up your mind. It's one or the other. I can't get it, you know? This time around, I got it. How is it? Why is it? What is it that makes these last 10 years so markedly different than those 12 that I was in and out, burning my life to the ground twice over, burning and destroying everything good in my life twice over? How is it that these are so different this time around? It comes down to one word and one word only. Every time I speak, I know what it comes down to. The marked difference, one thing and one thing only, sponsorship. Sponsorship. Huh? This time I got a sponsor. This time I got a sponsor. This time God put him in. Yeah, go figure. Oh, revolutionary idea here in AA, isn't it? You know what I mean? What a novel idea I came up with. I think I'll get one, you know? I got a sponsor. God inspired, God directed, God centered, God driven, God conscious through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. A guy who told me from the start, I don't care what you think, I don't care what you feel, those are not my concerns. My job is one thing and one thing only. I'm going to take you by the hand. I'm going to hold your hand. I'm going to ask you to trust me, Dave. I'm going to walk you down a path that's called the pathway to power. I'm going to walk you down that path. I'm going to put your hand in the hand of a power greater than yourself, and then I'm going to step aside. I'm not going to go home and play God. I'm not going to stand around and admire what a wonderful job I did with Dave Perry. I'm going to go and get me a new guy right away. You know what else I'm going to do, Dave? I'm going to show you how to do the same thing. Because whether you realize it or not, if you want recovery in your life, he told me, if you want recovery, and I'm not talking sobriety, he said, sobriety, quit drinking. You want to get sober, quit drinking. Hell, I could tie you to a tree, you'll get sober. You know? He said, if you want recovery in your life and there is a marked difference, carrying this message is not an option. It's an absolute requirement. You've got to get out there, Dave. You've got to start carrying this message. It's an absolute requirement if you want recovery in your life. And he goes, I know what you're going to do, Dave. I know. If you just follow me down this path and follow my lead, I'll show you exactly what to do. I'm not the kind of sponsor, Dave, who cares what you think or cares what you feel. I'd rather step on your toes before I stand on your grave, and I'm going to tell you the truth. I'm not the kind of sponsor going to tell you how to run your life. I'm not the kind of sponsor to tell you what meetings to go to and not go to. I'm not the kind of sponsor to tell you when to date, who to date, where to date, how to date. None of that. I'm not the kind of sponsor going to tell you to call every night. Matter of fact, Dave, I'd really rather you don't. You know? I'm simply the kind of sponsor who's do what the job of a sponsor is. I am going to get you to God, and I'm going to get you to God now. Because that is the only problem you have in your life right now. You have a severe, severe, severe lack of power going on, and I'm going to show you how to find one. But it's got to be one that's bigger than you, so let's go. That's what this guy showed me. That's what this guy taught me. And he told me the truth of the matter is simply this. This is a program for the people who want it. Needing what we have means absolutely nothing. My God, needing what we have? God knows I needed what you people had. For 12 years I needed what you people had. I'm burning my life to the ground, destroying everything good in it twice over during those 12 years. I needed what you people had. But until unless I wanted what you people had, none of that would matter. This is a program for the people who want it. I remember one time, this old timer in Boston gets up to the podium. In 2 seconds he sat down. He said simply this. Hey guys, if you don't want what we got, don't worry. You ain't gonna get it. Kick back, have some coffee, we'll fellowship, but if you're looking for recovery sitting in that chair and doing nothing more, you ain't going to find it. And he was right, I didn't get drunk watching the guy next to me drink. What makes you think I'm going to find recovery watching the guy next to me take action? Doesn't happen. Didn't happen. I thought it was going to rub off on me if I sat next to the happy, shiny guys, you know what I mean? Yeah, I want what you got, but I'm not willing to do a thing to get it, you know what I mean? So that's what it was. Oh, thank God for this guy. Thank God for the sponsor who taught me these things. You know what else he taught me? Right in this book, he pointed it out. Sure he did. Page 44. He said, David, you suffer from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. Only. Gonna give me one of them. I got to find me a spiritual experience. No idea how, but I guess he's going to show me. And I'm just thinking about an illness. How is this possibly an illness? How is my drinking an illness? I don't get that at all. How is my drinking? I'm just a guy who likes to party. I work hard. I play hard. How is this an illness? I'm just a guy who likes to drink every day, you know? You know, a blackout now and then. What is wrong with this? You know what I'm saying? Why do so many people in my life have a problem with that? I don't know. But I couldn't connect this thing of an illness. If it is an illness, guys, could I please have a pill? You know, seriously, if there's a spirituality pill out there, I'd take one. No, I'd take two. I know who I am, you know? If one is good, two is great, I'll take 10. You know what I mean? Let me get through the week, you know? Or how about the kind of illness where you check me in the hospital, cut this thing called alcoholism out of me, and let me go home? You know? That's the kind of illness I like. You know? Seriously, 8 years ago I had my gallbladder removed. I haven't thought about it since. Don't hang out with other gallbladder sufferers, you know? Don't look for meetings with Gallbladders Anonymous, you know what I mean? I'm all set. They're done. You know? That's the kind of illness I'm looking for. You know? You know what else he showed me in this book? He pointed out, he said, Dave, if you're the whole in the soul alcoholic, if you're the real alcoholic, if you're the alcoholic of the hopeless variety, which I am, he says, Dave, you only got two choices. Only two choices. Trust me, guys. I looked for a third. Give me an easier, softer way, please, you know. 12 years I looked for a third. I couldn't find one. Neither could the 100 men and women who wrote the book. They couldn't find one either. Why? Because this is the easiest, softer way. I didn't know that. You know, my sponsor said, you got two choices. It's like I'm at a game show. Dave, behind door number one, a life based upon spiritual principles. Behind door number two, doom to an alcoholic death. And I'm like, oh my God. Can I phone a friend? Someone out there, help me, help me, help me, help me. You know what I mean? I don't know. You did it too. You didn't know which way to go. I got my mother going, choose the spiritual principles, Dave. You know what I mean? And I'm over here saying, hey, God, just how bad an alcoholic death are we talking about anyway? I need some more information. Come on. Help me, help me, help me. Yeah. You know? Look, I got here first when I first worked in the halls of Alcoholics Anonymous. It was 1989. I was 29 years old. Here's what it looked like on the outside. Looked pretty good. I'm practicing law up on the North Shore of Boston. I'm working for a pretty prestigious law firm. You know, I got all the trappings of success around me. If you kept, you know, I love it. I got those glorious courtroom victory tales to tell you about. All these stories of my grandeur in the courtroom. You know, and if I met you in a bar, I'd pull up in a $50,000 sports car parked right out front so you could see it. You know, I got a 4-bedroom, 3-story brick townhouse out in Medford outside of Boston, $800 suits, and all the trappings of success around me. But you also would have seen, had I knew it existed, what you also would have seen, had I knew it was even there, you would have seen a hole in the soul this wide, a hole in the soul this big, that all the drink and all the drug and all the glorious courtroom victories and all the beautiful, shiny sports cars and beautiful townhouses and all the wonderful friendships and the best parents and brothers and sisters in the world just couldn't seem to fill. I couldn't fill the hole, no matter how I tried, you know? And I came here in 89. I went off simply and solely because I was about to lose my job with that law firm, you know? And I, you know, if the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking, well, that's a wonderful thing, except I didn't have one. I had 3 bosses who had a desire I stopped drinking. Maybe they should have come. You know what I mean? I didn't have that. So this thing wasn't going to work for me from the beginning. It wasn't going to work for me from the beginning. I wasn't ready for it, you know? And so began that 12-year journey into Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, where I'm sentenced to sobriety, where I'm miserable in sobriety, you know? I look back at those 12 years, and I got to say, what do I have to change up different this time around? What do I do a little different? Well, the one thing that really stands out when I look at those 12 years, one of the biggest mistakes I made is I came in here convinced drinking was my problem. And I'm talking about, for the sake of this conversation, guys, the drink, the drug, and all the things like it, because the drug was right beside my drink on my table. But, you know, this is AA, and out of respect, I'm just going to call it the drink for the sake of this conversation. Everyone in my life is telling me I got a drinking problem. I get my parents telling me I got a drinking problem. My brother and sister telling me I got a drinking problem. The best friends in my life, like you say, who are no longer in my life, I can relate, are telling me I got a drinking problem. My coworkers, my clients are telling me I got a drinking problem. You know, it's getting bad out there, you know? You know? So simply and solely to save that job, I said, okay, if I just take this drink out of the equation, problem solved. Stop drinking. My sponsor this time around said, you got a drinking problem? Quit drinking. Quit drinking. And if after you quit drinking, you find you still have a problem, well, maybe the drink wasn't the problem to begin with, Dave. Maybe you're the problem. Ha! He's right. He's right. I thought if I just removed the drink from the equation, problem solved. Well, if you're the hole in the soul alcoholic, the hopeless variety, the real alcoholic this book talks about, and that is me again, you see, guys, when you take my drink away, you don't just solve my problem. You take my drink away. That's when my problem's just beginning. You just started the problem. You just created the problem. It's like, now what? The one thing in this world that gives me relief, I have it plastered in my hand for 35 years running. The one thing that allows me to walk out in the world, which otherwise terrifies me, and I can walk smooth, and you're going to take it away, and I'm supposed to be okay? How's that supposed to work? I wasn't a problem drinker, guys. I was an answer drinker. Life was the problem. Drinking was the answer. You know? You just took my miracle away, the solution. You know? So now what? You know? And I didn't cross some magical line somewhere along the way and that happened in my drinking career. Tell me. No, that's not the way it happened. That's the way it was from the start. Okay, take you back to the age of 13, October 73, just for a minute, to a little patch of woods in Reading, Massachusetts when I got drunk for the first time with my friends. You know, and I had all the pains, pressures, and problems. I had the fears, doubts, and insecurities any 13-year-old kid will have. But my God, 15 minutes in those woods with that drink in my hand, and my God, did my world change. What a monumental night in my life. What probably the most life-changing event in my entire life took place at the age of 13 in October of 73 in Apache Woods in Reading when I got drunk for the first time. You know? We know what simply happened that night, you guys? The fear went away. I liked you guys better when I was drinking. I liked the world around me better when I was drinking. I liked myself better when I was drinking. And I made a decision that night. You know what I decided? I didn't even know I was deciding. I made a decision that night. I made a decision to make that drink and later, all the things like it, the most important thing in my life. And to keep it the most important thing in my life, I'm going to pay a lot of prices. I'm going to pay a lot of prices as I go along. And you did too. My seat in Alcoholics Anonymous did not come free. That seat cost me pain, suffering, misery, heartache, confusion, loss. Loss. You know, I can't even begin to describe it. I can give you a good analogy. I heard it in Boston. It works for me just as well. I'm 21 years old. I walk into a package store in Boston, walk back to the back aisle, open up the cooler, pick up a 12-pack of Budweiser, walk to the front of the place, put it down on the counter, looks at the guy behind the clerk, behind the counter, looks at me, says, kid, that'll cost you $9.95. And every real friendship you've ever had. Sounds about right. 31 years old, lady walks into a bar, she says, like a shot in a beer, please. Bartender pops it down in front of the lady, says, that'll cost you $8 in your marriage. Me? I was 41 years old. I walked into a liquor store in Boston, went to the counter, point to the top shelf, like that bottle of mezcal, please, the tequila. Guy puts it down, pulls it down the shelf, pops it down in front of me, says, kid, that'll cost you $17.95 and you're licensed to practice law in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. And I looked him back square in the eye and I said, sounds about right. And I paid it. And so didn't you. What price you pay? Huh? What'd your seat cost? Anyway, that's the way it would go for me. You know, I get through college, I get through high school, college, law school. I'm out there practicing. And now it's 28, 29 years old. The drink is totally riddling my life. It's totally controlling. I've lost the power of choice. And so began that journey when my boss said, either you get out or you get fired. And so either you get sober or you get fired. So I got sober. I jumped out on a plane, flew out of Boston, and went to a 28-day prehab. You know, and there were a lot of God-inspired men and God-inspired women out there carrying a message of hope and a message of love and a message of recovery, a message of 12 steps, a message of God. And I was hearing none of it. Why? Because we have a principle here in Alcoholics Anonymous. You cannot say the right thing to someone who's not ready to hear our message. You just can't say the right thing. But by the same token, like I say, when I was out there, you couldn't say the right thing to me. You could have Dr. Bob to my left, Bill Wilson to my right, and Lois pouring coffee, and I wouldn't hear a thing, you know what I mean? Wasn't ready, you know? I just wasn't ready. But the flip side of that's true. Just like you can't say the right thing to someone who's not ready to hear our message, you can't say the wrong thing to someone who is. When the God in you touches the God in me and the magic we call recovery happens, when one alcoholic reaches out to another alcoholic for the sole purpose of recovery, that magic, that power, that electricity, how many times has that happened to you when you're talking the language of the heart? Huh? When something comes out of your mouth and you know you're talking one-on-one to that guy, one-on-one to that woman, you're talking to that group and all of a sudden something comes out of your mouth you've never heard before. You know? You've never read it, you've never heard it, you never said it. It's like, oh my God, it's like one of those, why, that was good. I gotta write that down. That was awesome, you know? And 10 minutes later, you can't remember what you said. You know? Because they weren't your words to begin with. They were God's words, you know? And that's the way this language of the heart works. You know? So anyway, those 12 years will be marked by a lot of tragedy and a lot of loss along the way. This book gives me some directions. Real simple. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we're like now. In the end, it's November 2001. I'm a walking shell of the man I used to be. You know, I'm unemployed and unemployable again. I'm thrown out of another law partnership, a six-figure income gone overnight. I'm trying to put a law practice, I'm trying to put a law practice together by day while I'm walking the streets of Boston at night doing whatever came next to get the drink. You know, every real friend is gone. You know, tears in my parents' eyes on a nightly basis placed there by my actions that I'm powerless over stopping. My parents aren't alcoholic guys, but trust me, they suffered from alcoholism. Mine. You know, every bit of potential, ambition, and drive I once had are gone. I can't even get out of bed unless there's a pipe or a drink waiting for me. You know, honor and dignity lost in the dust of my addiction. Honor, morals, and values are warped beyond any sense of recognition. My bottle's empty, my wallet's empty, my life's empty. I'm just a walking shell. My last night out there was Wednesday, November 14th, 2001, a night like any other for me. I coughed an 8-ball, smoked it, banged back a fifth of tequila so I could forget about you and the rest of the world. Ended up closing some dive bar up in Lowell, Massachusetts, and I closed that bar like I've closed every bar I've ever been in. Lights are flashing, Dave, you gotta go. You gotta go. You know, so, you know, I looked up at her, and she looked up at me, and she gave me the nod, and I grabbed my glass, kicked back that last sip, and I put that drink down, that empty glass down that bar. Guys, I had no idea that was going to be my last drink to date. I swear to you, from that moment to this, I've been living a plan not my own. From the moment that empty glass hit that bar to this very moment I'm standing before you now, I have been living a plan not my own. I trust me, guys, had I known that was going to be my last drink, I would have ordered two. You know, one for the road, you know. Had no idea. Anyway, I went home that night and I passed out, ready to get up and just do it all again. And that'll give you an idea of what I was like. Here's what happened. On the morning of Thursday, November 15, 2001, my sobriety date, I woke up to a knock on the door unlike any other knock I've ever heard in the morning. At 5:30 in the morning, on the other side of the door stood the FBI, the DEA, two state and two local, and they were looking for me. In the end of a long, sad, heart-wrenching, and oftentimes despicable run was over. Next thing you know, I'm standing in front of a United States Federal District Court judge. Apparently 38 of us were arrested that morning from Miami to Boston. 38 of us from Miami to Boston, 17 in Boston. I was one of them. Next thing you know, we're standing in front of a United States Federal District Court judge who's looking down on us, telling us that the charge was a conspiracy to possess and distribute 500 kilograms of cocaine. Kilograms, seriously. I buy 8 balls. It's like, could I see one? could I touch one? Just wait a minute, you know? Seriously, I should have been so lucky out there, you know? You got the wrong guy, you know? I got 8 Colombians to my left and 8 Colombians to my right, and there's Dave Perry in the middle. It's like, what happened, you know? Someone shoot me now. This has gone way wrong. And I would have told you that day, this judge is telling us the charges carry 10 to life. None of us are getting bail, and none of us can even use a phone for 72 hours. And I would have told you that morning that this, oh my God, is the worst day of my life. And I firmly believed it that day. You know, here I stand to you tonight, reporting yet again the truth. I don't quite look at it that way. Today I'm looking back at that event as probably the single greatest event of my life. And I'm also here to report, I firmly believe with every cell in my body, God sent those men. I have no idea what got you in your seats today. None whatsoever. But I guarantee, if you look hard enough, I guarantee you there's a hand of God somewhere along your journey as well. We don't get here by accident, you know. Anyway, I'd be shipped off to jail. And I know when my worst day of my life was, 2 days later, Saturday, November 17, 2001. 50 years today, my parents were married, and 50 years today we're celebrating their wedding anniversary back in Reading. Now, the fact that I'm not at this wedding anniversary does not make this the worst day of my life. I've missed family events along the way. This is nothing new. You know, what makes it the worst day of my life is this. I'm sitting in Plymouth County Correctional Facility down in Plymouth, Massachusetts, in a room about the size of this. 80 bunk beds spread across the place. It's New Man where they put us. I'm with 79 strangers. I'm sitting on my bed that night, and from myself to the doors away, I'm staring at the wall, and what stares at the wall back at me is a payphone. And you guys, I realized for the first time in my life, even if I wanted to get up, walk across that room, and pick up that receiver, I had no one left to call. I've never been more alone in my life than I was at that very moment and realized just how microscopically small my world had become. And that's my bottom. I found it. I don't want to let it dip any deeper, drop any lower, or slide any further. I found my bottom. I heard a woman one time say it back in 2003 at a meeting in Baltimore one time. She asked a question I'll ask of you. Have you found that place in your life where you have no place left to go but to God? Have you realized, guys, that there's no power on earth that's going to relieve us of our alcoholism? There's none. And what our job is really quite simply here is simply we need to find a power by which we can live, and it has to be a power greater than ourselves, obviously, you know? I didn't know that then. I don't know what my prayer was, God, what's wrong with me, but I got an answer. I got pulled out of that jail cell a few days later, and I got put into the Federal Pretrial Services Division. I'm here but for the grace of God and the compassion of the federal government. They put me into a detox, to a therapeutic community, into a halfway house, and onto a sober house. And for the first 8 months of my sobriety, I was sober for one reason and one reason only, fear. If I picked up a drink, I'm going back to jail, so I'm staying sober. I don't want to. I don't want to. God knows I need a drink. You know, but another miracle in my life happened on July 21st, 2002, 8 months into this deal. Another 8 months of suffering and sobriety, just like those 12 years, looking around saying, my God, tell me there's more to my life than this. If all I have to look forward to is hot coffee on cold metal chairs hiding out in church basements the rest of my life, shoot me now. I'm not going to make it, you know. Another 8 months of untreated alcoholism happening. And when God put another man in my life who became my sponsor. It was an old friend of mine. He moved out of Boston in 97. He was sick. He had to come down to Baltimore to be with his family. You know, I hadn't seen much of him, but in the podium, in the 8 years sober, he met a man at a podium, Alcoholics Anonymous, in 1997, who carried this message and showed him the way down this path. And my friend Steve turned his ugly sobriety into recovery. I didn't know this was happening down there. I was in Boston with the drink in my hand, paying no attention to Steve. But he was kept checking up with me. When he heard about my arrest and the fact that I was back in treatment, he contacted my sisters throughout that, and then he called me. Check this out. He calls me in July of 2002. I'm 8 months sober. He says his sister's got a place up in New Hampshire. He's going up for 3 days. Just a little vacation. Just a few days off. And then asked me if I wanted to come. You know? Seconds and inches our lives can turn. What if I said no? I wouldn't be here tonight. See, guys, I thought I was just going to have a few days with an old friend. I had no idea God was sending my sponsor. He gets off the plane at Logan that day. My God, is he different. He's God-inspired, God-sent. He looks different. There's something about his eyes. He's on fire. He's glowing. Inexplicably different. The exact same experience Bill Wilson describes near the end of that bleak November 1934 is the exact same experience I had when my buddy came off that plane. My God, and he starts talking to me. And within 15 minutes, he gave us the greatest gift. He gave me the greatest gift that any one of us can get in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm telling you guys, hope. Hope goes a long way with us. Hope that maybe, just maybe, I could have what he has too. Hope that maybe, just maybe, I could get set free. You know, he looked right at me and says, David, you got to find it. I'm going to help you. You got to find God. I'm going, Steve, you got to be kidding me. I got to find a lawyer. I got to find a loan, a new career. I got to find a lot of things, Steve, but God's not on the list, you know. But I had no other options, so I started following this guy. But I said, Steve, I've been around. I've seen these steps on the wall. I see them everywhere I go. I don't understand how they work. I don't agree they're going to work. I don't even believe they're going to work. I said, how do you do these steps if you don't understand them? How do you do these steps if you don't believe in them? How do you do if you don't even agree they're going to work in your life? He says, David, you don't have to understand them. You don't have to agree with them. And you don't have to believe they're going to work. I said, well, how do you do them? He says, all you have to do is simply become willing to follow a person who has already done them. He said, the greatest promise on page 58, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. He says, can you walk behind me down a path? Can you stay 3 feet behind me down a path? You don't got to say what I say. You don't got to think what I think. But if you do what I do, you're going to get what I got, because this is a program of action. It's a whole bunch of things to do in here, Dave, none of which you've ever done before, so why don't we get going? I said, when should I start these steps, Steve? He says, when do you want to recover, Dave? I said, now. He says, how long are you going to come to a 12-step program and ignore the 12 steps? You know? In my case, 12 years, but hey, you know. By 3 that afternoon, I'm taking my third step. I'm signing up for a job. I'm offering myself to God. I'm becoming an agent of God, secret agents of God. That's all we are, you know. That's the day I took on a new employer. I get back in the car. I said, Steve, that feels great. I took a third step. I feel great. Let's go get some dinner. He goes, no, let's get a notebook. He drives me to a country store. He sends me in. I was hungry. He sends me in. I bought a notebook and a pen, and he gave me directions on writing my fourth step. My resentments, my fears, my sex conduct, I put them down on paper. 3 hours later, I was done. I was searching and fearless and thorough. Over the next 3 days, I read my sponsor, my fifth step. Only problem is now we're back at Logan. He's jumping on a plane going back to Baltimore. I go, ho, how are you going to sponsor me from Boston to Baltimore? How are you going to do that? Don't you have to give me rides, pick me up, lend me money, buy me cigarettes? Who's going to do that? You know, how are you going to do that in Baltimore? He said 2 words. He slipped that big book in my hand. He hugged me at Logan Airport, and he whispered 2 words into my ear, Dave, let's trust God. I went through the rest of the steps with this guy over the phone. 3 weeks later, we were done. Some guys will say you can't do that. Well, color me wrong, but color me recovered. It worked, you know. I took directions from an armed man armed with the facts about himself and experience of the 12 steps, and it worked. I dotted every I, crossed every T, I followed the directions, and it worked. And guess what happened? 3 weeks later, I started to get that spiritual awakening. I started to get it. The spirit that was so dead when I got here slowly starts to come alive and awake, not by what I said or what I heard or what I read, but what I was doing. The actions I started taking, that's what started doing it. And my sponsor made it real clear. He said, David, every day is a day. Every day is a day you have to carry the vision of God's will into all your activities. I don't say clean on yesterday's shower. I don't say fed on yesterday's meal. I'm not saying physically fit on yesterday's workout at the gym. And I'm not going to say spiritually fit on yesterday's action. If I want it today, I got to do it today, and it's just that simple. This is not a program for lazy people. Get it straight. It's just not. You know the greatest miracle that's happened to me since that day in July of 2002 when this man came into my life? The greatest miracle that's happened to me in these last 10-plus years or whatever it is? My obsession to drink and drug, guys, the most powerfully destructive force in my life, has been removed. It's gone. It doesn't exist today. It's gone. I'm not fighting the fight today. I'm not hanging in tonight. I'm not no monkey on my back. I'm not shooting for midnight. I've been set free. When did it happen? Where along the way did that happen? Which morning did I wake up and found it was gone? I can't tell you. I can tell you about these great dates in my life. Anniversary days, birthdays, graduation days, the day I was sworn in, the day I was disbarred. All these great days in my life I can tell you all about, you know. Why can't I tell you about that one singular event when my obsession to drink and drug was lifted? The reason is simply this. I had nothing to do with it. God took it. One day when I wasn't looking, when I was staying about his business, when I was watching out for his kids, he was watching out for me, and he removed the obsession. So now where am I? 3 weeks into it, I got my sponsor. He's down in Baltimore. He's got me on the phone. He says, you're going out tonight? I said, yep. You want a little direction? I go, what do you want me to do? You're going to a meeting? I said, yes, I am. He goes, here's what I want, Dave. You ready? Tonight I want you to go to that meeting, but I want you to change it up a little bit tonight, Dave. I want you to walk into that meeting tonight, and instead of you walking into that meeting looking to see what you can take, because God knows you've been taking all your life, how about you walking into that meeting looking to see what you can bring? Because I want you to find that new guy in the corner all by himself and let him know he never has to be alone again. Find that girl over there who's shaking away and let her know she never has to feel that way again. He goes, I want you to start talking about your experience. I want you to start talking about your actions you've been taking. I want you to start talking about these steps we've been taking. I want you to start talking about your recovery. Dave, I want you to find someone tonight. I want you to find someone tonight to sponsor. I go, you gotta be kidding me, Steve. Seriously. How do you expect me to do that? I don't know it like you don't. I can't say it like you say it. You're down there for 8 years with this book in your hands. I don't know it like you don't. I'm not ready for that. He says, David, I know you're not ready, and you know you're not ready, and I know you're not qualified, and you know you're not qualified, but that new guy in the corner's got no clue you're not qualified. Get over there and help him. And I haven't looked back since. The message is simple, you guys. My time is up, but the message is simple. Let one of us show you how to carry this message. Follow us down this path and watch how your ugly, miserable sobriety can turn into recovery and watch what happens to your life from there. I guarantee it will blow you away. Thanks.
Hey, my name is Jeffrey and I'm an alcoholic and I chair the Atlantic Group. Let's thank tonight's speakers, Jeremy, Rachel, and Dave. You have heard a typical...